Hey, Hawkeye fans, Cyhawk edition, Chad Lystico, Kennington Smith of the Des Moines Register. Thought we would give you a live version to talk about Cyhawk hoops that wasn't taking place at like 11:30 last night. So this is a little bit more convenient time probably for all of us. Kennington Smith, how you doing? I know it was a short night for both of us, but obviously a lot to write about last night between, and we'll get to all these topics. Cyhawk dominance from the men and the women. Cade McNamara's appearance at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Chris Murray's injury and how long he might be out, what Iowa might have to deal with. And we should probably explain at some point, this might be our last podcast together for a little while. Nothing too crazy going on, just to calm fears, but we'll talk about that later in the show as we wrap up. But thought we would spread our wings a little bit today, Kennington, and talk some Cyhawk hoops. And I think people are feeling pretty good this morning.
Yeah, I mean, think about the circumstances leading up to tip-off. You have disappointing loss against Duke, you have a short turnaround, then there was speculation about Chris Murray's health, and then it comes out before the game that he's out, and there's really no timetable for his return. And it just felt like this was going to be a game that perhaps mirrored last year's game, where Iowa's best player is injured. And they're going up against this defensive-minded team that's going to pressure them. The offense was struggling up to that point. Just kind of felt like a worst-case scenario for Iowa, and they just kind of flipped it and turned it on its head and came out with a really dominating win, quad one win. So something that is going to help their tournament resume. And you know, to your point, you feel good about what the team showed without Chris, and it really kind of showed the potential of the team. And we talked about this before the game. Should Chris be out for an extended period of time, what would their record be by the time he returned? What would the team look like? And you know, obviously it's just one game, but it did come against a quality opponent, and I think it kind of gave fans and us a glimpse of where this team, you know, could potentially go when they're firing on all cylinders, because it was a complete win on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, definitely. This is one of those games where we at the Register have colleagues on the other side of the beat as well. And this happens all the, you know, once a year in football. And talking to Randy Peterson and Travis Hines, early morning beard props for Kennington. Newsflash, shocker. The beard is doing even better than it was last time. Well done.
The
Sorry to
agenda.
interrupt, you know, but
Yeah,
this is more
no,
important.
right, exactly. Now the agenda is strong. You see me over here. I appreciate it. Thank you.
No question. What were we talking about?
Just kind of like the completeness of that they played with last night.
Threw me off.
Right.
The beard stuff threw me off. Hawkeyes get it done. I think you mentioned quad one win. Like, sadly, for the Hawkeyes, they were so dominant that they knocked Iowa State down 14 spots. So they're kind of just outside that quad one region, but I have a feeling they'll play themselves in with that Big 12 schedule. Anyway, we were talking about our guys on the Big 12 or on the Iowa State beat. Now I remember. And they were basically saying like they'd never seen Iowa State play that poor of defense before, or a team get that many open shots against Iowa State's defense that Iowa did. And I think that that's a credit to all the ball movement that we saw from the Hawkeyes from in their early going. I mean, to get through open threes, they just kind of left guys open at times from three. I mean, Patrick McCaffrey had a lot of open threes. They gave Aaron Ulis some open threes, and Filippo Bracha even knocked down both of his threes. So it was a much needed night for the Hawkeyes, an all around good performance, minus the 18 turnovers. But Iowa State's going to do that to teams. That's what they do. So really, really strong performance without Chris. And I guess I would just say, you know, we talked about the supporting cast needing to step up after the Duke game. Didn't know Chris wouldn't be available in this one, but all the supporting cast really did. I mean, obviously you have to start with Phillip, right? But
yeah.
But it really was kind of all six of those guys that Fran relied on. stepped up in their own way.
Yeah, you look at the stat sheet from last night, and something that's really encouraging is all but one starter scored in double figures, and the one who didn't was Aaron Ulis, and he still had 8 points, seven rebounds, so he had a strong game. Six different players hit three-pointers. Five different players hit multiple three-pointers. So coming into the game, you wrote a lot about the four-game-ish shooting slump, and Connor McCaffrey pointed out that even in games that they've won, they still haven't shot the ball very well. So it's almost been a season-long thing for the team. And they kind of exploded last night, shot 52% from the field. And to me, and I asked Fran about this after the game, because he said after the Duke game that he felt like the offensive execution was good. The shots weren't falling. And I said, you know, is it as simple as on this night that the shots were falling? And there was something, too, that I did feel like they were executing very well, which you have to do against an Iowa State team. And then also when you don't have your best player, somebody who can just kind of like take it one-on-one and go get a bucket, you have to rely on, you know, that system and executing well in order to manufacture shots for everyone. And that's exactly what happened. So a lot of encouraging signs from that side. And it kind of felt like even outside of Phillip, who had, you know, his best game as a Hawkeye, really a strong performance, it felt like everybody who played had some type of stamp on the game or some type of moment that contributed to it. I mean, Tony Perkins was hot from the start. Connor McCaffrey was contributing a lot on offense and defense. Peyton Sanford, it was nice to see him get a few shots going in. And then Patrick, I mean, that 10-0-ish run early in the second half by himself that got Iowa's biggest lead of the game, I believe it was 29 points at that point, was really good for him, because for as good as Iowa played in the first half, he was really quiet in the first half. I don't know if he scored in the first half. He might have just had 3 points, but he had 2 points and came out on a 10-0 run in the second half and started to catch fire as well. So there was a lot to like offensively from the team. And it'd be really interesting to see if they can carry this over to the Wisconsin game. And I think after that, you know, they're going to have a long stretch where they don't play again. So getting a chance to, you know, continue to gel with this new starting five and continue to build that confidence and some momentum through December is going to be really key for the team.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff to talk about in this one. And one thing I didn't really write about in my article was the fact that they got back from New York at 5 a.m. Central Time, which of course would be 6 a.m. Eastern Time. You know, from that long night at Madison Square Garden. I mean, that was a game that ended after midnight local time, and you know. And to have such a tight turnaround and to give that type of performance without their star was really impressive. And I felt like I want to give a shout out to Matt Gatens, who had the scout on this game. Obviously, a guy who knows the Cy-Hawk rivalry well, being a City High alum and a guy who's grown up with a father who played for the Hawkeyes around the Cy-Hawk game and knowing how much that means to the state. Also stood out to me how much Connor, in particular, Connor McCaffrey, who was a sixth-year senior, you know, pretty much lived. He and Patrick have lived their childhood in Iowa City. Understand the gravity of this game and what it means to the state. I thought it was interesting that Connor even kind of spoke about himself as an Iowan. You know, you kind of think about these "quote unquote," you know, this Philadelphia family, this New York family, you know, from Siena. You know, Fran's previous stop, but. But I feel like you know, these are Iowans now, you know, especially Connor and Patrick. They're Iowans, and they embrace the rivalry. And Connor ends up going, I think he said 4-1 in the games he played against with Iowa State. So a nice finish for him. And credit to Iowa for being sharp in the film study and sticking to the game plan. I mean, came out with that energy. I wondered if it could be sustained, but I guess when you get up 18-2, 20-2, you know, and you get the crowd behind you early. That was such a key factor, too. I feel like that was huge. And you made a great point. You know, can they sustain it a couple more days later now against Wisconsin in a Big Ten opener against yet another rival who's certainly going to have their attention?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they brought their energy from the opening tip. And it's kind of felt like in the last few games they just haven't had that kind of spark to start the game. They've kind of had to like ease into it. I mean, the intensity was there from the start. You have to credit, obviously, Phillip, who set the tone early. But I thought Tony Perkins came out and really played impressively from the start. And he's somebody in particular that I kind of felt like that energy and that spark was kind of like missing in this, you know, little recent stretch. And I know that he's been banged up, which I feel like has probably contributed to that. But Tony Perkins, early on, he scored, you know, 6 early points along with Phillip during that 15-0 run to start. The plays that he was making on defense and just kind of like energizing the crowd, I feel like that was a big part of it as well. So it was really nice to see Tony back playing with confidence again. And, you know, that dunk that he had in the second half really just, I mean, that took the roof off of Carver. I mean, he caught a body. If you haven't seen it, just search his name on Twitter. You'll find it. But that was, you know, really nice to see as well. And I think that you had a very timely column out of this game, which I think is kind of like the big picture question when we don't know the extent or don't know like how long Chris is going to be out with his injury. Fran was very careful with his words and just kind of said, we don't know. We're going to take it day by day. It's still very early on. But the question of how does this team need to play in order to remain afloat while Chris is out was last night, you know, that exact formula, playing really strong on defense, which actually set the tone, you know, for this game. Ironically, we think of Iowa as this kind of offensive juggernaut, which they are, but defensively, I felt like that's kind of where they laid their hat last night and really established their dominance. You know, hustle, continuing to execute well on offense and get balanced scoring. And, you know, if they can do all of those things, it's going to be difficult, obviously, you know, especially should they enter Big Ten play without them. But they can do all those things. You feel really good about, you know, where this team can kind of, you know, hold things together until Chris comes back.
I think one of the keys, I think, that teams are going to see if Chris is out, obviously, he is going to be out Sunday. Fran McCaffrey basically said that. I don't think that was a big surprise, especially with the tight turnaround and his left foot being in a boot. But I think other teams now will try to get Phillip Rabracha into foul trouble because that is where Iowa has almost no depth now. Rabracha played 37 minutes and 3 seconds and was fantastic in all of those. Ended up committing just the 2 fouls. 22 points, 11 boards, 9 of 11 shooting, 4 assists, 3 blocks. I mean, that was the Hawkeye game of his life for sure. Excuse me. And I think that'll be kind of the plan moving forward. This upcoming stretch gives Chris a chance to heal. Iowa doesn't really play Big Ten play again until the 29th, so I think that helps.
Yeah, had to unmute myself. But yeah, you know, and to your point about Phillip in foul trouble, we talked about this towards the end of the first half that Fran really only played, you know, pretty much just the starters throughout the first half. I know Peyton got some minutes and then played more, obviously, in the second half. But you look at the box score of the team, only 7 guys in double figure minutes. One of them was Josh Dix with 11 minutes, but he played a lot down the stretch as well. When the game was settled, Desante Bowen only had 3 minutes, Josh Aguinaldo 2 minutes, Peyton Sefford 16 minutes. And then every starter except for Patrick McCaffrey went 30 minutes plus. And they were able to do that just because they were playing really good defense and they weren't fouling. I mean, nobody was really in any type of danger of fouling out at any point in the game, and they're executing at such a high level, which is what you want. And I feel like that's been a common theme throughout this season. I mean, there really hasn't been any games where a frontline starter has been in some type of dire foul trouble that's forced Fran to adjust the lineups, but that will inevitably happen. And I think the question, you know, continues to be the development of the bench. And I think, you know, Peyton is trying to find his way. And I think last night was a big confidence booster. I'm not sure if it reflects that statistically, but he had some good moments in that game. And then, you know, you're a little disappointed that, you know, Desante kind of had this big flash against Duke and then it didn't carry over to this game. But Fran obviously has a lot of faith in him, so we'll continue to monitor that. But again, I mean, you look at it, another big game, another game where the bench rotation is short. He's relying on, you know, his top five, six, the veterans, the ones who were part of that championship run last year. So in that regard, you talk about how much this stretch is going to help Chris. I think it's also going to help the development of the bench and bringing along these young guys. A lot of practice time in between these games, a lot of opponents post-Wisconsin and pre-Nebraska that are subpar to Iowa's level. So you do expect a lot of these guys to get a lot more game reps, get them ready for Big Ten play. So again, it's all good when the team is not in that foul trouble, but I know what's going to happen, and I'm just really interested to see how the lineups adjust and who's going to be out there on the court when that does happen.
Yeah, this Wisconsin game becomes kind of a big one, because if they can sneak this one out, it's at home. It's your Big Ten opener. The Badgers are coming off a really nice win in their Big Ten opener against Maryland, which I believe had not lost to that point. So, you know, this is a Wisconsin team that's, you know, defeated Marquette, USC, but lost to Kansas in overtime by one, but did lose to Wake Forest at home. So kind of a mixed bag there. This would be, if you can grind this one out, you get to 8-2 overall, 1-0 in the conference. Then you win those two non-conference games and buy yourselves a lot of time for Chris Murray to get healthy. If, you know, apparently on Jeff Goodman's podcast, I have not heard this, last night, Fran said he thought Murray would be out a week or two. From what I know, I think that's optimistic. I think it'll be longer, but we will see. Just, you know, they're looking into this injury. You know, they said lower body, but obviously, you know, it's left foot. You know, was in a boot, left, you know, that's where it is. I mean, I don't know if we have to really say lower body in our articles. I kind of put left foot because that's obviously what it is. So, it wasn't a knee or anything like that. So anyway, how much time can they buy? So if, you know, let's say he has to sit out the Nebraska game, even on the 29th, and at Penn State on the 1st, all, you know, then you look all the way ahead to that big game against Indiana on Thursday, January 5th. You know, could he be back by then? That would be about a month from that Duke game. So, you know, is that enough time for Chris to get healthy? And if not, you know, does he have to miss a couple more games? And then, you know, look at Thursday, January 12th. That starts a 3-game homestand. Maybe that could be a target date for his return. I mean, we're just speculating. But what can Iowa do? Where can Iowa be when Chris returns? And you kind of set that up, Kennington. I think no matter when he returns, all of a sudden, especially if you can get some good feelings going with a win against Wisconsin and just kind of buy yourself some time. These guys are all finding out how good they are without Chris. And then when he comes back, that's where this team really, I think, could be exciting, because if you get the best of Rabracha, you get the best of Connor, you get the best of Perk, Patrick. I mean, and we do believe Peyton Sanford is going to heat up at some point. So that's exciting to think about, even without Chris here in the short term, right?
Yeah. And obviously you never want your best player to be hurt or be out for an extended period of time. But the ironic part about this is that it might end up helping Iowa's team in the long run, because up until this point, what we've been discussing is the team potentially being too reliant on him offensively. And if his game isn't going, where is that second score, that third score? Where are the points going to come from? So I think that this team and the new starting lineup and Chris becoming the number one, it was a lot of players trying to figure out their role on this year's team. And there are a lot of returning players, but there are players just in new roles, with Tony Perkins handling the ball a lot more and Peyton Sanford beginning the year in the starting lineup and then moving back to the bench and trying to find his rhythm, and Rabracha taking on a bigger role. So I think that you know, for this stretch, I think the important thing and the goal is for everyone to kind of, you know, find their role, find their game. And then when Chris comes back, it's all about being a star in that role and maximizing what your job is. So I think this is going to be a big, you know, educational discovery, you know, information gathering, whatever you want to call that for this team. There's going to be a lot of that going on where guys really start to kind of gain that confidence and figure out where they fit on this year's team. And then, you know, when Chris comes back, everything should be well defined. And then you feel like they'll be able to roll from there and be that team that should be at the top of the mix in the Big Ten. So, again, it all started with last night's win over Iowa State, which I think was a really, really, really big confidence booster for the team, especially with all the things that you highlighted a few minutes ago with the short turnaround. They really didn't do a lot of on-court work before the game. So it was just watching film and then going out and just applying it in real time. They didn't even have time to go out there and practice anything live, you know, to implement this game plan. So really impressive in that regard. And, you know, again, like you said, this Wisconsin game has pretty big implications. So should they be able to get that win on Sunday, then you really feel good about where the team is at post, you know, the loss to Duke.
Yeah, and they've pretty much clinched a 9-2 non-conference campaign with their only two losses. Obviously, you'd love to be 11-0, but their only two losses, you know, assuming they beat Southeast Missouri and Eastern Illinois here in the coming weeks, you know, those are bad teams, so it shouldn't be a problem. You know, that clinches 9-2 with their only losses to Duke and TCU, which should be two tournament teams, should end up being two quad one losses. Nothing that's going to hurt them or anything in the resume. So again, you know, if they're 9-2 non-con with a strong net, at this point, they're in the top 25 right now in the net. And, you know, you go 10-10 in the Big Ten. I mean, that's like, you know, if you have to struggle without Chris for a little bit, you're going to get in the tournament. I mean, that's the goal here, is to get into the tournament. And so all these non-conference wins, you know, Clemson, Georgia Tech, this one, they're kind of adding up in terms of just giving Iowa that a decent enough resume to give themselves a little wiggle room without Chris here. So let's talk a little bit about, unless you had anything else on this, I want to talk a little bit about the women, but go ahead if you have anything else on the men.
I was just going to say on that point, that was a really good point about, first of all, them being 9-2 in the non-conference. I feel like that's about where you probably would have projected them to finish anyway in the non-conference. So there's been, you know, some ups and downs throughout this stretch, but you come out of it 9-2. I think that's about what you would have expected from the team. And even wins like, you know, Georgia Tech, for example, who isn't a great team, but they are a power conference opponent. You compare that to last year's schedule where they had one of the worst non-conference schedules in the country. A win against Georgia Tech, you know, from that regard is much more favorable to, let's say, last year when they played Western Michigan in that slot. So you got an improvement of a strength of schedule in that regard as well. So I just wanted to make that quick point.
Yeah, and I left out at Seton Hall. I know Seton Hall hasn't been great yet, but I think they're probably going to improve as the season goes on and become a potential tournament team. We will see. But, you know, as long as they stay in the top 75 at the net, that'll be a quad one win because of the road game. So let's talk just a little bit about the women before we move on to Cade McNamara and whatnot, because I know there's a lot of football interest here as well. But I just want to give the women some props. Obviously, the wrestlers too. But I felt like I was traveling back from New York during the women's game. I really wish I could have been there, but I know you were there, Kennington. And I was actually, it was fun. It was, I was in the airport bar there in Chicago on my layover, and they had the Iowa women's game on the bar at the O'Hare Airport. And that's how big of a game it was. People were watching it, and it was just fun to see just the energy that Iowa came with in the second half there. I felt like that kind of set the tone for Cy-Hawk. It was like, you know, that atmosphere looked really fun. And I felt, you know, Caitlin Clark was just on fire after the game with the interview and everything like that. And I would just give me a sense, since I wasn't there, and I know a lot of fans, you know, soaked that in, kind of how did you feel like that kind of set the tone for what happened in the men's game and the environment that we felt last night?
Yeah, for sure. And in a lot of ways, that game very much felt like the men's game, where defense set the tone. I mean, they were really strong defensively, held Iowa State to 36% from the field. Ashley Jones had 15 points on 13 shots. They held Iowa State to only 9 assists, and they got the crowd into the game. Electric atmosphere, it was to be expected, and that carried over to the men's game. That was Iowa State's men's first road game of the season, and you could tell the first 5 minutes, I mean, they were rattled. But getting back to the women's team, crowd carried them. They had a really strong third quarter. I think it was just kind of everything that you wanted to see out of the women's team. Monica Cezano was a lot more aggressive, 14 shots. She's kind of been in that single-digit shot range over the last few games, so it was good to see her record the double-double. Caitlin Clark was spectacular. And how about Kate Martin? I mean, she is really emerging as that kind of number three scoring option. She's been shooting really well these last few games going back to UConn. So, and Iowa women shot 45% from three, which is a good sign for them because they haven't shot the ball well. So the men and the women's team have kind of been mirroring each other in a way where kind of like the struggles have been the same, and they had a chance to get a big win, and they did it in the same way. So for Iowa women's basketball, their non-conference schedule was also very vaunted. There were a lot of big games on there, but to this point, they hadn't gotten that signature early season win. So this was a huge win for them as well, top 15 win. And I think, and I predicted this on our radio show last week, that I really felt like they were going to come out and get the win over Iowa State. I mean, the North Carolina State loss was really disappointing. You could see that on their faces in the postgame. They wanted to come out and make a statement in the next game, and they did exactly that. So it seems like Iowa women's are back on track as well.
Yeah, it was it's fun to see, and great parallels there, Kennington, on the men's and the women's team. I felt like that Iowa State caught Iowa both on both sides at a bad time for them, because these were hungry teams at home with a lot of energy and the crowd on their side. Speaking of the crowd on their side, Kennington, let's move into Iowa football now. As we saw, Cade McNamara, the new QB1 in the house last night, along with some other potential recruits. Cade was sitting with Mason Richmond, the left tackle, and then Eric All, the tight end from Michigan, who potentially could become Hawkeye. I believe he's down to three schools, including Iowa, Notre Dame, and Washington. Is that right? And, All was sitting next to Sam Laporta, probably a good guy to be recruited with. Couple little observations, just, you know, we don't get to talk to these guys because you're not allowed, they don't let you talk to recruits, and Cade isn't signed or anything like that, but I thought Eric All is like way bigger than Sam Laporta. I mean, this guy looks like a dude. If they compare him and Lachey, man oh man, that's something else. And this is a captain for Michigan. And then Cade McNamara, I thought Sam Laporta was limping more than McNamara. So that was encouraging to me too. And then obviously, you know, we'll get to it, I'm sure. But McNamara, you know, was being approached by fans. And then, you know, as he walked out into the tunnel, he kind of gave, you know, like this to the crowd. He was feeling kind of the energy in there, and the fans kind of to showed him some love as well. So it was a good experience, I would think, for him. And there were some other recruits up there as well.
Yeah. Hope I'm saying his name correctly. Ernest Hausman, linebacker from Nebraska, had a really strong freshman year, was also there, and he was paired up with Jay Higgins. So again, really good host to have somebody who can who you can bounce things off of. And a lot of coaches were represented there. Brian Ferentz, Seth Wallace, Abdul Hodge, obviously, like, their three positions kind of correlate to who was visiting. Tyler Barnes was there as well. A lot of other members on Iowa's football team. I saw Jazz Patterson, saw Caleb Johnson. There was a large group of them. And going back to the atmosphere, I mean, what a perfect storm it was for Cade and for Eric and Ernest and everyone to take in what that meant. I mean, that was definitely the best men's atmosphere of the season. It was Cy-Hawk game, a game that all of those guys could potentially play in next year. It's the biggest rivalry, for this school. And it was a blowout win. So you got the fan element. They got a chance to feel what the fan base is about. They got a chance to see the university in a huge rivalry game, and they got to see a win. So all of those things, I think, kind of jump-started what is a really important recruiting weekend for Iowa football. And I think that especially if you're K, you have to be loving just the energy that the fan base is bringing. And, you know, you kind of appreciate how it seems like this is going to be, at least from like a culture and like, you know, personality fit standpoint, it seems like this is going to be very seamless. A lot of people were kind of taking pictures and taking videos of him and Mason sitting there and everything. It seems like they're getting along well. So you kind of see them starting to build that relationship really early on, which is encouraging. And, you know, to your point about him pumping up the crowd, and I know we're going to get into some other, you know, K-related topics, but if you're a fan, you have to love the confidence and kind of the swagger that he's bringing to, you know, back, you know, to the program. And for that position specifically, that's really important. So, again, I think that to jumpstart this weekend, it couldn't have gone off to a better start.
Definitely. And let's segue. You said you'd mentioned McNamara's confidence. Let's segue into his interview, his first interview, which was on a podcast called The Room, right? That's what it's called. Is that right? Yeah. Thumbs up. Yeah. Which he was talking to some guys he's known for a long time on that pod. And he had a lot of interesting things to say about his recruitment and the portal, everything like that. I'm kind of curious what jumped out to you. I transcribed a bunch of his quotes, and I'm going to be writing about this kind of on my before I go on furlough, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, which is why we won't have podcasts together for a little bit. But he came right out and said, I think Iowa has enough pieces right now to go win a Big Ten championship next year, and I'll make sure to do everything I can to make sure that we do. So he's already talking about, coming here to win a championship. And that was something that was interesting. But I think, you know, the biggest thing that the fans are kind of interested in was basically that he basically said, I was going to wing it around. That's what he was told, that their offense, they know their offense needs to change, and they're going to throw it a lot. Now we'll see. I don't know. Do you buy that? I buy that they told him that. Do you buy that they're going to do this? And who will be the offensive coordinator when that happens? And thank you to our producer, Dargan Southard, who I was blanking on the names of the quarterbacks that hosted. It was Kyle Allen and Jordan Palmer. So there you go.
Yeah, I think initially what jumped out to me about the comment of the championship is obviously going to get fans' attention because we feel like Iowa has championship level defense and championship level special teams. And with an adequate offense, feel good about your chances to play at that high level in the Big Ten. I think he says something to the effect of, you know, over the last several years, we've kind of known Iowa to be a program that's carried by their defense. And, you know, we want to change that or flip that on the offensive side. So, you know, seems like he's done his research. He seems very aware of Iowa's situations and their pitfalls and kind of what they need in order to reach that next level. Now, I do believe that they are going to start to push the ball down the field. I mean, that's why you go out and get somebody of his caliber. Not to say that he has, you know, some huge rocket arm, but they are going to, I think, do some things differently offensively. I think they sold him on that. And it'll be really interesting to see because we've talked about this on previous pods. That vertical passing game was just something that was non-existent in the offense this year. So he knows and that Iowa's offense needs to be more explosive. They need to push the ball down the field. So I'd expect that to be a part of their system next year. As far as who's going to be the offensive coordinator, again, I feel like it's all going to play out after the bowl game. I said it in my last postgame mailbag after the Nebraska game that I – am not of the opinion that everything is going to stand pat. I still stand by that. And this isn't me with some inside information. I just very much feel like something is going to change on the offensive side. That's going to be more tangible than going out and getting players out of the portal because Iowa was going to have to do that anyway. So I'm going to reserve judgment on that until after the bowl game. But again, like back to my last point, if you're a fan, you see the confidence that he's bringing. You see what he's saying. You see his assessments about the offense, about the team, about the program, and they're all very much spot on. So it feels like a very good fit. And I think the question now is kind of what weapons are they going to put around him so we can have a full scope of what exactly Iowa's going to be working with going into next year.
Yeah, he said he talked about Iowa coaches' plans to bring in more, you know, certain guys in the portal, and he seemed really excited about those guys. So, you know, while the process is playing out, I think he's got a good feel for some maybe potential guys that they're going to have on the team. Obviously, Eric All would help. And he probably has a hand in convincing Eric to come. But here's the quote I wanted to focus on about himself, reason he came to Iowa. He talked about being in high school and taking a 4-7 team to a championship level when he took over a quarterback. He talked about Michigan being really kind of a bad team during that COVID year of 2020. And then he kind of won the job and then took them to a Big Ten championship game. So this is kind of what he does is, and that's what excites him about, hey, he can be that piece that takes them to the next level. And then he said this, Kennington, I wanted to not be labeled as a game manager anymore. And I understand the offense that Iowa has had in the past. They made it extremely clear that we're not looking to stay this way. We are well aware that we need to change in order to make us contenders again in the Big Ten championship. For me, that was such an intriguing opportunity because not only are they looking to change, but I'm looking to change the perception of my own game as well. There's something about bringing a team back is something that I really love to do. So this is a guy that's got those leadership qualities, and you can see why Iowa liked him, and you can see why he everyone out there is wondering, and even the podcast hosts, Allen and Palmer, were kind of like questioning, like, why would you go to the worst offense in the country? And he was like, that's because I want to make a difference. And so that's exactly what you want. And kudos to Iowa for selling that vision and for him buying into it. I mean, it's such a fortunate situation right now for the Hawkeyes to have him coming into the fold. And we're not guaranteeing greatness, but man, if they can get this position right, I do feel like there's a lot to be excited about. Just making the throws you need to make to win Big Ten games.
Yeah, I think that those comments are like twofold. So internally, if you're Cade, think about what the perception is of him right now coming out of Michigan, where people might say, was he so good at Michigan because he's just a good quarterback, or was it because he was surrounded by a Joe Moore, a winning offensive line, and elite receivers? You know, they recruit very high at that position, at every position at Michigan. And he had, you know, Harbaugh, who's coached Andrew Luck, and he's you know, played quarterback in the NFL. Like, was he, you know, that guy, or was he a product of having a lot of, you know, great resources around him? So I think there is some motivation for him to kind of prove himself. And I think that you hit on that with not being just a game manager, somebody who actually can push the offense forward. And then you think about the external benefits. I mean, what would the perception of Cade McNamara be if he was the quarterback who could come in and take Iowa from the literal worst offense in the country and maybe just take them to top 80, top 75, which nationally, you know, you would look at it and probably not that impressive, but that would be, you know, a 180 from what they were, you know, last year and the year before and other years prior. So huge opportunity for him to, one, prove himself and then reap some major benefits of being the guy who kind of spearheaded this offensive turnaround. And then obviously the benefits for Iowa's program are pretty obvious. Like, you get a guy who can come in and, you know, return Iowa to, you know, the statistics of like a Nate Stanley. I was talking to Scott Docterman at the Athletic. He said that Nate Stanley had 67-ish touchdowns in like a stretch where he 68, was 68, where he was a starter in the last, what, two seasons, maybe even three seasons with Spencer as the the guy. They've only had 27 passing touchdowns between him and Padilla. So the drop-off has been tremendous and well-documented. Obviously, we don't have to continue, beating that dead horse. But this is something that's just beneficial for everyone. And like you said, it really just kind of came at the right time for Iowa. It was like a perfect storm. You have a program who's on the cusp and trying to kind of hit that next level. And you have a quarterback who has been at that level and knows what it takes and knows what it's supposed to look like. And now he's looking to do that at another place and kind of bring them up to that level. So on the surface, you have to love the potential marriage. And then obviously, the hard part obviously is getting weapons around him and then actually putting that product on the field and having good results.
Yeah, there's tons of names still that Iowa's kind of involved with, and we'll get to those, as Iowa, if and when they get these commitments. A couple guys that I can't remember if we talked about on our pod on Wednesday, but Seth Anderson, did we talk about him? Seth Anderson from Charleston, just the Southern.
Briefly,
yeah, he went to Tyler Goodson's high school. He's interested. Has an offer from Iowa, and then Isaac Tesla, the D2 star from Hillsdale College. So with that connection with Zach Van Valkenburg, outstanding film. He's down to, it looks like, Iowa and Iowa State. So that, those could be a potential couple of guys. Maybe Nico Reggini returns. We haven't seen any additional wide receivers go into the portal, right? So at this point, I think that's a good sign that Deontay Vines is going to be back in the fold. You got to just keep acquiring weapons, and this is going to be a long process in the portal. The guys are going to make their decisions. They're going to get all the information they need to, and this is a 45-day deal here, But the good news is I think all these guys will be here in January, and that would be huge. And I was just encouraged by the way Cade was moving around. We don't know what his health situation is. He didn't talk about that on the pod with those guys, but that was encouraging. It's not like he came in on crutches or anything like that,
Yeah, and to your point about Tesla, he starts his official visit to Iowa today. So huge weekend for the program. I know they're hosting some high school recruits as well who have been committed in this class. So really big recruiting weekend. And, you get him, with Cade, Eric Gall, they start having those conversations about what things could look like. You have to feel good about their chances. I think that all would be such a huge addition.
Yes.
Health pending, obviously, but he was an NFL draft prospect coming into this year. I mean, he was already all Big Ten coming into this year. To be able to pair him with Lachey, who is a rising star, even if you're not super impressed with whatever wide receiver haul Iowa comes in with, that two tight end combination is something that could lift Iowa's offense to that level. And I am not saying that a all Lachey pairing would be like Fant and Hockenson, but that was really the last time that Iowa's offense was kind of humming at a certain level when they did have those two high level tight ends and they had a quarterback in Nate Stanley who could get them the ball. So I know that perimeter weapons and all of those things, pushing the ball downfield, that's what Iowa fans want. But to be able to get somebody like him and pair him with a star in Lachey, that would be a great foundational starting point to have two, potential all Big Ten tight ends, at once, and being able to go out of 12 personnel a lot and being able to exploit some matchups. And again, I know the offense wasn't great this year, but the tight end room was the best part about the offense. So, continuing to get an elite talent, Abdul Haas did a really good job this year. You feel like if he's able to secure Eric All's commitment and continue to push Lachey forward and get him in the fold, and Addison Ostrenga is a stock riser as well, feel really good about where that position could sit in 2023. So, I just wanted to throw that out there as well. And it should be a really interesting stretch. We're at that point in the portal now where it seems like everybody who was going to enter, and this is not just all right, well, this is just kind of naturally. It seems like everybody who was going to enter has entered at this point. They've had, you know, the week. Now offers are starting to go out. Now we're getting into that visit part of the portal. And over the next week, 2 weeks, that's when you're going to start to see the commitments going in. So Iowa's right on schedule. I would say they're even probably ahead of schedule of some other teams. They already got a commitment. They're already hosting priority guys on campus all within a week of the portal opening. So feel like they are, you know, they're cooking with grease here. Obviously, they're going to have to secure some commitments, but you feel good about where Iowa stands and the aggressiveness and the urgency that they are moving with. I've said this before with the program. A lot of it with Iowa is just a simple question, proactive or reactive? They're going to be go-getters. Are they going to sit back and let things happen and react from there? It seems very much like the early part of the offseason, they're being like the go-getters and the aggressors, which is exactly what you want to see.
Yeah, Eric All had, I think, a third-round NFL draft grade. And you know, we don't know what he's going to do, but it would seem – he's coming off back surgery, but it would seem to be a kind of an almost ideal fit for him because he, you know, coming off the injury, he wouldn't necessarily have to be like 60, 70 snaps a game next year, but it would be, you know, that type of pairing where he's probably going to play. I mean, Iowa played Lachey about 50 snaps a game and Laporta about 60. So, you know, they're going to get plenty of work, but, you know, the fact that they can complement each other, that would be huge. But we'll see. Good setting the table there. One last question, and I guess this is probably a good one for us to finish up on, is, you know, the Music City Bowl, which is our next assignment together, is interesting because now everybody's opting out, at least on not on Iowa's side, but Kentucky's side. Will Levis and Chris Rodriguez opting out of the game. That's their best quarterback, obviously, draft pick, and Rodriguez, best running back. So do their opt-outs kind of make this game even more intriguing in a sense, or, you know, of that maybe Joey Labus or Carson May will not be completely overwhelmed here, or what? What do you make of this game now that we're going down to cover? I'm kind of fascinated by it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes it more interesting because it feels like a fair fight for Iowa. And coming into this, with all the opt-outs, it felt so much like, oh, this is going to be a game where they're just going to go down there. They're going to get slaughtered. They don't have the guys. They don't have what's needed to go and compete. You know, they should just completely focus on, you know, the portal, building next year's team. And about 80% of Kentucky's offense opted out with those two guys. And Kentucky's offense, for those who haven't watched them this year, I have because, you know, they're in the SEC East, they have not been good. You know, Levis and Rodriguez are the only two guys that they have on that offense. And even still, the offense was not highly ranked. I don't have the stats in front of me, but you can go look them up and see for yourself. So yeah, it very much feels like this is like, again, this is the Spider-Man meme. Like the two pointing at each other is literally just, it's going to be that. It's going to be two strong defenses, two quarterbacks who have never played, not a lot of offensive production statistically. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, maybe who has the ball last, or maybe who scores first wins, or, you know, whichever defense can win the turnover battle, or, you know, all of those kind of things. It would be very, I don't know if ironic, maybe funny would be the right word, if Iowa's season kind of ended the way that it began. Like, let's say they beat Kentucky 7-3 on two safeties and a field goal, or it's like the Iowa State game where they, you know, 10-7, two defenses just going at a lot of special teams plays. But I think it makes it more interesting. And I think the, you know, while we're on this subject, I'm looking at FanDuel right now. So, you know, I'm not telling people how to, you know, spend their money, but I was actually favored in this game by 2.5 now with the news of the Kentucky opt-out. So even a little bit more than a fair fight, there are some people who are expecting Iowa to win. So, you know, think about that, the potential to end the year with a win and go into next year with a lot of momentum. So I think the interest level is going to be high for this game, if not just for Iowa side, just to see what the quarterback situation looks like. There's a legitimate chance to win now.
Yeah, how about that? That's crazy. And maybe the reason Iowa's favorite is because Jack Campbell, the Butkus Award winner, as we found out last night, is playing. And I think the entirety of Iowa's defense, you know, should be available for this game. And that, if you put that first team Iowa defense, man, against whoever Kentucky's backup quarterback is, I know it's not Deuce Hogan yet, but man, yeah, it's hard for me to imagine. As you talk about Kentucky, if they're bad on offense with Levis, I don't know if they're going to score against Iowa. We haven't done a lot of research on the game, but man, I mean, if all these guys for Iowa are playing, Van Ness, Campbell, Benson, Tejean, Moss, whew, yeah, should be interesting. Anyway, so I guess we have to explain kind of what's going on the next couple weeks. Don't really want to do this, but as folks know, we've at our parent company Gannett has been doing has been laying people off. Unfortunately, we are not being laid off, but we do have to take a furlough week piece in the month of December, which is for those that don't know, it's just unpaid leave. But you can't work, you can't do anything during this week. That's just. Those are the rules. So I can't even tweet next. So next week, I will be out, and the week following, Kennington will be out. But obviously, that also means, just to explain to you guys, we can't do podcasts together. Now, we could do, you know, like next week, Kennington could have a special guest or something in a podcast, and that would be totally fine. But we just won't be together. So we'll miss you. We'll try to come back recharged from each of our breaks. Kennington's going to have a heavy load next week. I'll have a heavier load the following week. And then he and I will be back together in Nashville. That's the plan on December 27th. So let's just plan on doing a podcast that night to welcome folks back. How about that?
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, it's obviously unfortunate with the climate right now. And, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with those who, you know, have been laid off. So it is a tough situation for us that we're not going to be able to kind of, you know, work together over the next few weeks. Seems like we've been building, you know, a lot of positive momentum with, you know, the podcast and the work that we're doing, and it's been reflected in the feedback that we've been getting. So, you know, we appreciate that. We continue to encourage fans to continue this ride with us, even if we're going to be separated for a few weeks, but we do get back at, you know, a good time with the bowl game and then the Big Ten basketball season will, you know, just be starting up at that time. So, you know, not looking forward to not podcasting, say that five times fast. Not looking forward to that for, you know, the next few weeks, but I'm really excited to get back. And once we do, it's going to be a really important and exciting part of Iowa's athletic calendar.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. I can't wait to see you. In a couple weeks. And, you know, if something wild happens in the next 24 to 36 hours, we'll still have time for an emergency podcast, you know, like five commitments or something like that. But other than that, the plan, you know, that we kind of laid out our plans. And this is why we went long today. We just wanted to give you guys a special, I guess, going away present together. But it's temporary. We'll be back in Nashville. I don't know. Who knows? Podcast a day down there. What? Yeah, let's go crazy. We'll make it up to you, I promise. And thanks a lot for following along, Kennington. Any final words? If not, for Chad Lysico, Kennington Smith, I'll give you the final word here, Kennington. Since you're going to take it away, you're going to take away the coverage from here for the next week. So, and then I'll pick up the baton on December 19th.
Yeah. Well, going back to a comment in the chat, someone complimented you on your Christmas tree, which I also said once you got on camera, I was like, wow, look at the scenery. So I just end on the note of, you know, saying Merry Christmas to you. Your family, we love the Waffle House mug for those who aren't watching this on our video version. So shout out to you for that. But I just want to say, you know, Merry Christmas to you and your family. You know, going into this is our second year together as partners on the beat. It's been a lot of fun. So, you know, hoping that you have a happy holidays with your people. And when we get back in Nashville, we're going to have a lot of work to do. So try to enjoy this furlough week, spend some time with your family, kick your feet up. And, you know, just know there'll be plenty of work for you when you come back.
Well, Merry Christmas to you. And just because we're on furlough doesn't mean he and I can't talk. Like, we can talk to each other.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We just can't talk to you guys as, or I can't talk to you next week as a work work guy, and same for Kennington. But again, maybe that break will be good for us. We'll come back recharged for the bowl game. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Kennington. You're the man. And appreciate you guys, and enjoy your holiday season. Talk to you very, very, well, not very, very soon, but talk to you again in the future. Take care.